Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, February 2nd. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, anti-ICE protesters gathered outside of Humboldt County Superior Courthouse last Friday and Saturday. SUPE's majority non-favor of Bayside parcel splitting. Resource Environmental Solutions awarded Merit Award for its work on the Klamath River Renewal Project. Stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
As discontent grows over recent immigration and customs enforcement actions, local residents gather in front of the Eureka Courthouse to make their voices heard in solidarity with the nationwide general strike. Julian Jackson reports.
On Friday, January 30th, and Saturday the 31st, several hundreds of Humboldt County residents gathered at the Eureka Humboldt County Superior Courthouse at approximately 4 to 6 p.m. and 12 to 2 p.m. respectively, as a part of Friday's nationwide general strike and in solidarity with other general anti-ICE protests in Minnesota and across the country. For more information, KMUD News spoke with AJ, an organizer for 5150, the organization that helped facilitate and plan the protests.
My name's AJ. I am the coordinator for 5051 Humboldt, and I organize most all of the protests up here, most of the 5051 protests. So 5051 was originally a grassroots movement with the original goal of getting 50 protests in all 50 states in one single day. And in the past year, we've really blown past that and organized some of the biggest protests in U.S. history, millions of people coming out across the nation, thousands of protests in thousands of cities. And so now we mainly function as a collective network of smaller local chapters of 5051 that operate together for large calls to action for large national protests, and also use the 5051 name to help bring awareness to and support for their local communities and groups. The central message of this weekend is ICE out of our cities, ICE out of our states, ICE out of our country. Abolish ICE. We are standing in solidarity with Minnesota, the people of Minnesota, and their call to strike and walk out, but also hands off Greenland, hands off Venezuela, hands off Gaza, and also just generic anti-Trump protesting, because at this point there's so many things people need to be protesting, people want to be protesting, that it's hard to make an event for just one of them. It's better to give everybody an opportunity to air their grievances.
AJ went on to explain 5051's role as an organization in these protests.
So 5051 participates in two main ways. I mean, I think our main benefit is, of course, just our name, the fact that we have the national attention, we have the national media. But on site, 5051, at least in Humboldt County, under my leadership at least, is adopting more of a hands-on role. We have adopted the formerly Humboldt Democracy Connections and then freelance protest security team, which I've led since July. So 5051 will be organizing protest security. We also will be doing, you know, a lot of the behind-the-scenes work, organizing musicians and, you know, the speakers and microphones for the musicians, organizing with other groups to get other groups involved, organizing with, say, Central de Pueblo and Food Not Bombs, for their food drive and the bake sale. And then also we have people walking around talking to media and talking to the attendees, making sure everyone's okay. So we're taking on a little bit more of a hands-on role.
The protest on Friday also garnered a particularly large youth turnout, with a big factor in this being a walkout from Eureka High School. AJ continues by discussing this sudden push by youths to get organized.
One thing is, at a lot of these protests, I want to say, since I have joined, I've seen the youth there. not in the numbers that we saw yesterday, not in the numbers that we saw at the Cal Poly protest, but they have been there, and I don't want to count them out. But I think that it really is a challenge of getting people organized, and I'm guessing that the students have wanted to do something. The question is, how big could they get it? And I spoke to some students yesterday who were still worried, as I'm always worried with every single one of these protests, that, you know, only maybe 3 or 4 students were going to leave and nobody was going to leave, but then it turned out to be 200. And I think that that fear of not having the large group to back you is scary and it's real. But I think that they've been seeing it. We've all been seeing it. It's on all of our social medias. It's on all of our timelines. Whenever we open up any app, somebody else was shot. Somebody else was arrested. Something terrible happened. And I think that they're done with it. They're done sitting still and waiting for the adults to change.
For more on this, KMUD spoke with the 2 student organizers for the Eureka High walkout during the protest Friday, starting with 15-year-old Kai Holland.
Okay, so I'm Kai Holland. I'm a student here at Eureka High. And what made us want to organize this is because once one minority of all of us is attacked, we're all attacked. America was built off immigrants. Why are we trying to get rid of them? They're being held in places that are... Even Germany is comparing them to concentration camps. Germany is calling America Nazis. When you realize that a country like that is calling us Nazis, we have a problem and we need to fix it. So the way that I see it, it is a privilege to not protest. It is a privilege to stay home and do nothing. You can say all that you want, like, oh, I'm supporting this. You can say all you want. But coming out here and showing your support is what puts pressure on the government to change. Personally, I am actually a mixed person. I am mostly black of that north. And because we've always faced some type of oppression, and it's always hurt me and my family and everything about that. In the moment that I saw that immigrants were being attacked, I wanted to do something, whether that was come out here and actually protest, whether it's something online. I just wanted to help any way that I could.
Kai then gave advice for other youth interested in similar organizing.
So if you are doing it specifically from a school, get in contact with your principal. It may seem like they're going against you, but in reality, they will provide you with the things that you need to get this started. For those who are not in school, though, I would search up your local laws and everything to see, to make sure what's legal, what's not, what you can do, what you can't do, and just go based off of that. And then once you get that done, spread awareness about it. Spread pamphlets, spread online. Online doesn't get as much coverage as pamphlets or like stuff in person, but try to spread it as much as you can. We will not back down until the government changes. I know it's not specifically Humboldt County, but until this American government changes, we will not back down.
Hi, I'm Dylan Burks. I helped Kai organize. I'm also a student here at Eureka High. One of the reasons I really wanted to help and organize this walkout is because once we start killing innocent civilians, what is the next step? There are too many innocent people that have to die and that have to, like, just be imprisoned and torn away from their families. Our country was made up out of immigrants, and the second we start getting rid of them, our country falls apart. We need to appreciate the hands that feed us and the amazing people that, like, everything they do for us. No, I've been going to protests since I was a young girl. I'm born and raised in America, and everything they're doing makes me ashamed to be American. I love my country. I hate my government. Our government is not okay. We need to protect our people. If you have a voice, use it. And one little voice makes such a huge difference. Like, we are kids speaking up. This should not be our problem. But, like, it's just so insane to me that us kids have to use our voices to speak up to adults who can't see what is wrong with their doing.
KMUD also spoke with several more Eureka High students on site.
My name is Miles Fretland. I'm 16 years old. I came out here because I don't believe in deportation. I don't think that ICE is even a good thing. I don't believe that they should be killing innocent people. If you're on the fence about protesting and activism in general, you can just silently get involved with it and just let people know that you are against it. You don't even have to, like, fully advertise it. Just as long as you make people aware that it is not good and spread information and make sure people are not getting misinformation.
Yeah, no, I feel 100% safe. I'm very comfortable here. This is not, it's a peaceful protest because it's supposed to be peaceful. That's what we were instructed to do. I'm really glad there's nothing violent happening. I feel totally comfortable here. This is probably the most comfortable I felt in such a large environment before.
Hello, my name is Ia. I'm 17 years old, and I know that my family is probably next, so, you know, I don't want that happening. It's really loud here, but honestly, there's nothing. It's pretty it's somehow like very nice here at the same time. So, like, I don't know. Join us. Yay!
Hi, my name is Havana Oliveira. I'm here because this is a really sad thing that we're all going through, and it's really messed up, and I don't get why we all can't just go get along equally, and why they have to do this such thing. I just want to be here to support the families and children who are going through this, and it's a really scary time, and you're not alone. To see so many people here supporting this incident, and it just makes me feel happy that us in Humboldt are really against this like horrible thing. So it makes me happy,
especially as a young person. It is very comforting to see how many adults are here.
Yes, definitely.
Back to AJ, the coordinator with 5150 that helped organize both protests over the weekend, as they also spoke on the president of the protests being peaceful. Why did I put...
Well, I would like to emphasize to everyone that these are peaceful protests. At the Eureka events, we are in communication with the Eureka Police Department annual. That also can be off-putting to some people. I would just like everyone to know that the Eureka Police Department has shown time and time again and reaffirmed to me time and time again that they are there to protect the people. And we, the protesters, are the people. Most of their job is making sure that nobody is doing anything dangerous on the roads. We had an incident last night where a man had his hat stolen and did something very dangerous in the road. And he was very quickly arrested by the police. And I just want to make sure that everyone knows that these events are peaceful. These events are protected. And, of course, nobody can ever guarantee safety in these times, but there are people there who are working to make sure that everyone is safe.
AJ also mentioned similar future events.
This was very last minute. I do know that there are multiple groups who are working towards national general strike. I know I was involved with General Strike US for a brief period, and they're working on a national strike, but they're doing it on a much larger scale. The only events that I know of coming up that people should save the date for, not this Sunday, but next Sunday, February 15th, we will be having our next big march in Arcata. It will be at the David Josiah Lawson Memorial, and we will be marching to the Arcata Plaza and rallying there. I do not have a time set yet. That will be coming out probably this week. And then, of course, the next really big No Kings protest on March 28th.
For more information about such events, you can follow 5051.Humboldt on Instagram with a Facebook in the works. To get on their email list, or to get on the Signal Protest Announcements chat for Humboldt County, you can email 5051Humboldt with a lowercase h at gmail.com. AJ also said that anyone interested in similar community organizing should reach out to them and 5150 for support. They have put together a guidebook on youth organization and activism and are even willing to set up trainings with parents. I've been Julian Jackson, reporting for KMUD News.
In a narrow vote, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors declined to study a significant land use change in the greater Arcata area. Daniel Mintz reports.
A majority of Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors has voted against investigating the possibility of allowing parcel splits in the greater Arcata area. Impacts on groundwater was a primary issue as the board debated Bayside area parcel size reductions at its January 27th meeting. The discussion stems from an appeal of the County Planning Commission's denial of a property owner's request to split a golf course road parcel. The obstacle to doing that is the county's general plan and the Jacoby Creek Community Plan, whose parcel size minimum is 5 acres. When supervisors took up the appeal last September, the board decided to hold off on a vote and continue the hearing to allow planning staff to assess the area's conditions. During a public comment period at last week's meeting, longtime farmland preservation advocate Lisa Brown vouched for sticking to the parcel sizes in the county's general plan.
This general plan, with respect to timelines of general plans, is quite current and quite adequate. It is the result of over 66 hearings held before the board and over 100 hearings before the Planning Commission. During these hearings, supervisors received a huge amount of input for this specific area during the update. I'm sure many of you remember much of it was based on concern about the creek and the downstream flooding, which has only worsened in recent years, along with retaining the rural character and agricultural uses, following much consideration and discussion over many years of community input and concern. The decision on the current zoning designations were made. Some compromises were made and the community settled for some change, but certainly not nearly the level of development that is being discussed here.
County planning staff said if the area's minimum parcel size is downscaled to 2 acres, a maximum of 76 new parcels could be created. With mother-in-law units included, the size shrink could result in 228 new housing units. Other results include a, quote, steep increase in on-site septic systems that introduce, quote, the potential to contaminate both groundwater and surface water. Jacoby Creek Road resident Kathleen Stanton questioned the cost of studying the land use change and its impacts.
I think it's just too soon to make such a big change to the general plan, the Jacoby Creek community plan and zoning, in order to facilitate one applicant who basically wants to do a lot split but doesn't have enough land to do it. I think we should just continue to infill with existing parcels to allow our ADUs and the junior ADUs. Expending over $300,000 without enough public participation and time for discussion on such a big change to create 76 new parcels is just too great an expense.
Larry Henderson, the property owner seeking the parcel split, described the Jacoby Creek plan's 5-acre parcel size minimum as an exceptional case.
The fact is that 5-acre requirement is the only special requirement throughout the county. So if we're going to go through and we're going to do with community planning and start changing the plans, it should be just straight across the board. If we have this kind of an issue that starts warranting starting to consider changing our community plans, we need to look at straight across the board. What is so special about Jacoby Creek why we need to go through and start that planning process at this point? All we simply need to do is eliminate that one requirement of the 5-acre, put it back as standard straight across the county with all the other communities, development consistent with standards.
Bayside is in Board Chair Mike Wilson's district, and though he acknowledged the need for more housing, he described the proposed change as an entitlement that could, quote, double the environmental impact of each of those lots. After a discussion, the board voted 3-2 to not analyze the parcel size change any further. Voting in the minority were Supervisors Michelle Bushnell and Rex Bone, who had said, quote, we haven't done anything, I feel, to help move housing along. Henderson still has options. He can continue to pursue his appeal or file a general plan amendment request. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The Environmental Business Journal, a publication that provides strategic insights and forecasts for the environmental industry, presented a merit award to RES for work on the Klamath River Renewal Project. KMUD spoke with David Muir, the Director of Community Affairs for Resource Environmental Solutions. He explained the role RES played in the Klamath River project. He clarified that RES was not involved in the actual dam removal, but was responsible for restoring the surrounding environment.
The project was really broken into two big pieces. One was the dam removal part. We didn't do that. The other is the restoration of the area that was like a giant mud pit once the dams went out and the reservoirs were drained. So our job was to revegetate, rehabilitate, and reestablish tributaries in the footprint of the project.
One major part of RES's work was propagating and planting 20 billion native seeds, specifically suited to the regions along the Klamath River.
You can't go down to the Lowe's Garden Center and say, I'd like 20 billion native seeds that are specific to Southern Oregon and Northern California. So we had to propagate those seeds ourselves. And we did that long before the reservoirs were being drained, long before the dams began to be removed. We contracted with the Yurok tribe. And you picture crews going out, literally holding paper bags and going to native plants and harvesting seeds. And they got a few million of those native seeds, painstaking work, difficult work from about 100 different species. Then we took those seeds to specialized nurseries up and down the West Coast and propagated those seeds, grew them out 1 year, harvested, grew them out the next until we got to about 20 billion. And then we used that in the 2,200-acre footprint. Again, just picture an area that's been underwater for decades. There's nothing growing. It was just dead algae as a medium. It wasn't even soil. We replanted those 2,200 acres and then also rehabilitated and reestablished four important tributaries that were traditionally really important salmon-bearing streams within the footprint. They'd been underwater, you know, for up to 100 years. And it went spectacularly well. The weather was great. We got exactly what we needed. The plants grew, the willows reestablished, and it's looking awesome. And literally within a couple weeks of the lowermost dam being removed, Chinook salmon started to swim back by that site, and they are already using the habitat that we created.
Muir also reflected on what it meant for RES to receive the Merit Award from the Environmental Business Journal, which was recognition of the team's hard work and dedication.
RES has been recognized by the Environmental Business Journal for our work on the Klamath, and they gave us a Merit Award for large river restoration. And this is really cool for us because it means we're being recognized by leaders in the restoration world, that we've done something important, that we've done something that's worth noting. And so the Environmental Business Journal kind of tracks really significant sectors that affect the environment. And our sector, again, for restoration on a large scale, we picked up an award that's very gratifying, and it just speaks to the incredible hard work, because there were folks that practically really lived on the site for months at a time, and they were working, you know, 14-hour days and trying to operate within a limited window. It was a race to get the habitat fixed before the fish came back, and we made it. Just barely, but we made it.
Muir shared that the major restoration work is now complete, but monitoring and maintenance will continue, especially as Chinook salmon return to their historic habitats.
Right now, the major work is done, and so we are going into more of a monitoring and maintenance mode. There will still be some work going on, some seeding going on, weed eradication, that type of thing. But the really serious work of, you know, reestablishing plants and fixing the tributaries, that work has been accomplished. So it's kind of winding down, but in the vicinity, there are new opportunities emerging. For example, the Sprague River is one of the, it feeds into Upper Klamath Lake, and ultimately that water makes it into the Klamath River. It's really impaired. It's a primary source of phosphorus and nutrients and sediment coming into Upper Klamath Lake, and frankly, it's been doing a lot of damage for a lot of years. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers kind of rip-wrapped a bunch of it many decades ago and straightened it and channelized it before it was understood that's really a bad idea for rivers. It doesn't improve them. It makes them far worse. So we have been working with an organization called the Upper Klamath Basin collaborative to start looking at the Sprague, receive some funding from Fish and Wildlife Service to take a look at what could be done on the Sprague River to reduce those nutrients, start to repair some of that damage. So I think that this project is becoming a springboard into some other projects, and there are some private landowners who don't want to be named, but they've asked us to work on their ranches and make them more fish friendly and restore wetlands. So we're starting to do some more work in the Klamath Basin. It's really exciting.
Muir emphasized that this tremendous effort was only possible thanks to contributions from multiple organizations and tribes.
Yurok Tribe Construction Corporation, Stantec was heavily involved, Camas was heavily involved, and I have to pull up the list of all the folks who worked with us. But we worked under the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. They were the primary entity that was tasked with this job, and then we were the primary restoration contractor, and then pulled in others as we needed. I don't have I'm away at a convention. I don't have the full list in front of me, but I know Stantec was big, Camas was big, and the Yurok tribe was really significant. We also contracted with the Karuk tribe to do some of our fish relocation, juvenile salmon that needed to be relocated from the main stem of the Klamath River before dam removal. They probably would not have survived, and we worked with the Karuk tribe to relocate those fish. They're also helping us with water quality monitoring. And then the Klamath tribes in the upper basin, in the Chiloquin area, north of Upper Klamath Lake, they've got a world-class water quality lab. So we've been working with them and also working with tribes for monitoring of cultural resources. The Shasta Indian Nation has played a very important role. So kind of a tribal-centric approach in many ways, but it's really cool because there are multiple river tribes who've been wanting to see this work happen for a long time, and they're excited to actually be part of it and getting their hands dirty.
Muir added that Cal Poly Humboldt had also shown interest in the project. Colleagues from RES have visited classes, including Native American student groups, to discuss the restoration project. The university has conducted multiple studies on this project also, and the Humboldt County Office for Education even requested to use RES's material in their curriculum, to which RES gladly agreed. To stay up to date on the ongoing research and restoration efforts, look up res.us/Klamath, where RES provides a story map with project updates, photos, and videos. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Julian Jackson and Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.